Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Texas politicians are meeting today to begin a special legislative session called by Governor Rick Perry. He called the session after State Senator Wendy Davis stood for 11 hours without any breaks to filibuster a bill that would shut down all but six clinics that provide abortions in the state and ban abortions after 20 weeks. As citizens drowned out any possibility of a vote from 11:50 to midnight straight on Thursday night, the filibuster was a success. Now, because the filibuster lasted so long and Republicans attempted to silence Senator Davis, the bill in Texas is receiving nationwide attention. But the Texas bill is just one of hundreds being introduced across the country to limit and even prevent women from gaining access to abortion and other family planning services. According to the ACLU, in the past 12 months alone, state legislators have introduced more than 300 bills that would restrict abortions. And because of the recent Supreme Court rulings, the media have not given this much attention. The U.S. House recently passed a bill that would ban almost all abortions after 20 weeks. So on today's Your Call, we'll check in with women working in the trenches to talk about how they're responding to and challenging these laws. How are these laws actually affecting women? We often get the headlines, but we don't get much more than that. So what sort of outcome are we seeing because of these laws? Today, we are joined by Tammy Krommenacher. She's director of the Red River Women's Clinic, the only clinic providing abortions in North Dakota. The state has passed the most restrictive abortion law in the country, which bans abortions as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. The Center for Reproductive Rights is fighting the law on behalf of the Red River Women's Clinic, and Tammy joins us from Fargo, North Dakota. Hi, Tammy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We are also joined by Elizabeth Barnes, the executive director of the Philadelphia Women's Center. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett recently signed an anti-abortion coverage bill in Pennsylvania. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So I want to ask you both about what's going down in Texas, because as we speak, politicians are going to start the session, and again, thousands of people are expected to be inside and outside protesting this law. And as I said, this is getting nationwide attention because of this dramatic filibuster. But this is just one of hundreds of pieces of legislation that are being introduced and passed across the country. Tammy, put this into context for us. How are you making sense of what we're facing?
Well, I think what's happening is we're seeing that politicians across the country are, number one, taking lessons out of the Americans United for Life playbook. There is a playbook that is provided with model legislation that is given to legislators to pass these bills. And that's why we're seeing these same bills with the exact same wording all across the country. This is an organized effort to try and limit women's reproductive rights across the country. The other thing is I think that politicians are getting impatient. They're tired of these tiny little tactics here and there, and that's why, thankfully, finally we're getting this nationwide attention, and all eyes are on Texas today. But like you said, this has happened everywhere. There were rallies in Michigan. Elizabeth is dealing with things in multiple states in the eastern part of the country. We've got friends in Virginia who are dealing with laws. Ohio governor just signed a budget. I mean, it's just like the list goes on and on and on. Right now in Texas, I think all eyes there are there because they're doing an excellent job of organizing. They're doing an excellent job of using social media to draw attention. You know, Republicans in the regular legislative session, I think there was a plan. I think Rick Perry talked to the powers that be and said, all right, let's let this go here in the regular session. Let me call a special session and we'll get this passed. And it was a little interesting that Rick Perry was supposed to speak at the National Right to Life Convention the day after Senator Davis's filibuster. And those of us who work in this arena were pleased that, you know, her filibuster worked. But then he called another special session, and we're watching live streams right now, and we're seeing people have their phone video shut off. There's state troopers there. There's horses there.
Wow.
There's some interesting tactics being used to kind of stop the people from speaking their mind.
They brought in the horses?
That's what I've heard, yes.
Elizabeth, what would you add to that? I mean, a lot of people, this has been going on for years now, but do you think people understand how serious this is? I mean, especially those of us in California, where we're actually seeing some of the only bills that actually improve access to all sorts of family planning services.
You know, it's a great question. I feel like our abortion access is, we sometimes say it's a hard comparison, but the frog in the hot water. If you slowly turn the temperature up, the frog doesn't know it's being boiled to death. In the United States, I think that that's exactly what's happening to abortion access and abortion providers. In the states where there is good work being done, like in California, it's hard to imagine what's happening in the vast majority of the rest of the United States. I think there's a conception that as Roe stands, then abortion access is still fairly readily available to most women in the United States. But I actually, in many places, it is as if Roe no longer stands at all. And what I'm thrilled about the attention Texas is getting, I'm hoping that it helps illuminate what's happening in much of the rest of the country, and helps draw attention to the fact that though Roe stands, it is fairly meaningless in places like the better part of Pennsylvania, much of the American South, and the majority of the Midwest right now.
That's Elizabeth Barnes, Executive Director of the Philadelphia Women's Center. Tammy Kromenacher is Director of the Red River Women's Clinic, the only clinic that offers abortions in Fargo, North Dakota. And now I would like to welcome Jody Jacobson to the show. Jody is Editor-in-Chief of RH Reality Check, an online publication providing news, commentary, and analysis on sexual and reproductive health and justice issues. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody.
So, Jody, I mean, you and your team focus on these issues 24/7. And as you know, so many people are focused on, like, the NSA, for example, or just so many of the other issues that we are following. This issue tends to fall between the cracks, especially when you get like a week of Supreme Court decisions coming down. So can you put Texas into context for us? I mean, the ACLU says in the past 12 months, state legislators have introduced more than 300 bills that would restrict abortions.
Yes. Well, you know, we're seeing this as a national trend. It's certainly, a major objective of the far right in the United States to eliminate access to safe abortion care, but also to eliminate access to the full range of reproductive health care. We have to remember that they talk about abortion as a sort of smokescreen for the broader agenda, which is not only about abortion, but it's about eliminating funding for contraception, for pap smears, which find out whether or not you have cervical cancer early enough to treat it. You know, they are eliminating counseling. They are requiring rape centers not to counsel that a woman might have the choice of an abortion. They are using taxpayer funding to send women and to fund crisis pregnancy centers, which outright lie to women about things like, you know, abortion care and breast cancer, which has been disproven by the medical community. So this is sort of a religious right takeover of medicine that has to do with anything having to do with women's health care. And so you've got this slew of bills that for the past 3 years we've seen sort of, you know, literally a torrent of bills coming down every year to restrict access to abortion care. But those bills are also accompanied by efforts to reduce Medicaid funding for low-income families, to reduce access to contraception, to reduce access to other forms of reproductive health care, and to shunt women into centers that lie to them. It's a grotesque agenda because these are the basic kinds of health care that women need. And in other countries today, not in the past pre-Roe, but today, in other countries where these things are absent, women die at very high rates from complications of pregnancy and unsafe abortion. And that's where the right is taking us.
Right. And that is rarely, if ever, brought into the conversation.
Never brought into the conversation.
And that is Jody Jacobson, Editor-in-Chief of RH Reality Check. Jody, we're going to call you right back because we're getting some static on your line.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We're going to call you right back. Tammy, why don't you talk about what's going on in North Dakota? Last week, the Center for Reproductive Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of your clinic. First of all, the Red River Women's Clinic is the only clinic in the state that provides abortions?
Yes, we are.
And how many did you have, say, 5 years ago?
Well, that's the interesting part about North Dakota, is that there's really always only been one. North Dakota is a small state. We're not like the state of Mississippi, where there were multiple clinics that were regulated out of existence. We are one of a handful of states where there is only one provider, and you see some of those states like Mississippi and Arkansas and South Dakota and North Dakota, we are big targets for those that oppose abortion, because they want to be able to say we have, you know, an abortion-free state. And really what they're saying is you have a safe abortion-free state, because just because you take away abortion does not, legal abortion does not mean abortion goes away. So in North Dakota this year, we had 7 bills we started the legislative session with that were 3 personhood bills that would ban abortion, some forms of contraception, and even some methods of in vitro that are currently in place in our state. 2 of those, thankfully, went down, but in November of 2014, we'll have a personhood measure on the ballot. It's the first time that a state legislature has passed that. Usually it's just been a citizen referendum. And then we had 4 other anti-abortion bills that passed. And again, they sound just like what's going on in Texas. We had an admitting privileges bill. We had a 20-week ban. We have a sex selection. And for the first time ever, a state legislature passed a genetic abnormality bill. And then the 6-week, or when there's a detectable heartbeat, bill. Wow. So right now we have added the admitting privileges. We made a supplement, the Center for Reproductive Rights added a supplemental complaint to a trial that we just had in April from the 2011 legislature. We filed a lawsuit against the state. They were trying to restrict medication abortion. So that's a lawsuit in state court. And then, like you said, in last week in federal court, the Center for Reproductive Rights filed a lawsuit regarding the 6-week and the sex selection and genetic abnormality bans, which basically are pre-viability bans. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said time and time again, even when they've been asked to revisit this, that you cannot ban abortion prior to conception. And that's what the North Dakota legislature did, is they went the furthest of anybody. Arkansas avoided this because they didn't want to kind of jump into the transvaginal ultrasound arena, because that's what it basically requires, is to find that heartbeat at that early stage of pregnancy. You have to use a transvaginal ultrasound. But even though this is, you know, the most extreme ban, really, I mean, I feel optimistic that we will get this overturned. These are pre-viability bans. But what people like Elizabeth are dealing with are these rules and regulations that come out of these legislatures that these clinics have to put into place that absolutely have nothing to do with improving abortion care. Abortion is one of the most safest methods, or the safest medical procedures in the United States today. It doesn't need to be further regulated. And the regulations that these state departments of health put into place with inspections and hallway sizes and janitor's closets and all of these things that actually have nothing to do with the procedure itself, those are the real threats. Those are the things that are going to shut and already have shut clinics down. And Elizabeth deals daily with her many centers on the East Coast with these rules and regulations that take up staff time, staff resources, have nothing to do with improving women's lives or the health care of women.
And Tammy, in North Dakota, when you're talking about these laws that are passing, you've got a state of almost 700,000 people. I was just looking up your poverty rate, because I always wonder what the poverty rates are in these states. We did a show about public banking in North Dakota a couple weeks ago and talked about your budget surplus.
Yeah.
But despite that, you've got a 12% poverty rate in a state of 700,000 people. Do you also have anti-choice Democrats voting for these bills?
Yes, we do. We have, and there was one senator here from Fargo who, he's Catholic. And so he's a Democrat, but he's Catholic, and so he follows his Catholic doctrine. And he actually was a person who almost got one of these personhood bills passed. But the only thing that made the personhood bill go away is because at the same time he said, okay, if we're going to pass this, we also have to do Medicaid expansion, because what this is going to do is going to put more women and children on the Medicaid rolls. And the Republicans were not willing to expand Medicaid in that way. So he was trying to do the right thing, but it ended up, you know, it was a bad bill. We're like, just leave a bad bill alone. But he was a pro-life, or, you know, I don't like to say pro-life, I say anti-choice, because I am pro-life. Somebody who opposes abortion, pushing these bills and unfortunately not looking at the consequences of what that personhood bill would have done in the state of North Dakota. But we have a ton of women who live in the rural areas, women who have little access. You know, we're the only clinic. Women have to travel 5 to 7 hours sometimes to get to us. We're on the far eastern part of the state. And one of the reasons is because Fargo itself and Cass County that we're located in is a fairly, you know, as far as North Dakota goes, progressive community where we have community support, we have staff who are willing to work here, we have vendors who are willing to work with us, and that wouldn't be the case in other parts of the state.
That is Tammy Krummenacher, director of the Red River Women's Clinic, the only clinic that offers abortions in North Dakota. North Dakota has passed the most restrictive abortion law in the country, which bans abortions as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. The Center for Reproductive Rights is fighting the law on behalf of the clinic. We're also joined by Elizabeth Barnes, executive director of the Philadelphia Women's Center, and Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, an online publication providing news about all of these issues. And we'd love to hear from you. We wanted to check in with women working in the trenches to find out how these laws are affecting them and then affecting women on the ground. We often get the headlines. You can't even keep up with it because these laws are being introduced and are passing so rapidly. But what does this mean for women who actually need health care? So, you know, here in California, while it's difficult to obtain services in rural areas and very difficult if you're poor, we're actually seeing legislation to advance reproductive justice in the state. And so we thought it would be a good idea to check in with women in other parts of the country to find out what they're facing. If you have any comments or questions for them, we'd love to hear from you. And when it comes to organizing, providing support, what do you think is most effective? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Elizabeth, talk to us about what you're dealing with in Pennsylvania. Your governor Tom Corbett, recently signed an anti-abortion coverage bill in Pennsylvania.
He did. You know, previous to that, last June, Pennsylvania passed the first law in the country that required that all surgical abortions, whether they were first trimester or second trimester, be done in an outpatient licensed ambulatory surgical facility. And what that meant was any facility that wanted to try and continue to provide surgical abortion services had to go through a new licensing process outside of the state-licensed abortion clinic license that we all of us already maintained. And the anti-choice movement was able to pass this law on the tail of a very bad illegal rogue provider named Kermit Gosnell, who was who hit the headlines in the last year, and I'm sure many of your listeners were following the story, who's providing illegal second and third trimester abortions in addition to running a drug dealing operation out of his facility in a very poor area of the city of Philadelphia. And that provided fuel for the fire for the regulations to follow. And what's happened as a result of that is a number of the facilities in the state have closed. A number of others have had to limit their services to providing the non-surgical abortion pill only, which is limited in that it is limited to the early first trimester for women seeking abortion services, and it is fairly expensive to provide the non-surgical abortion pill service in the state of Pennsylvania because the cost of the medication is very high. So it makes it more difficult to provide charity or lower cost care for poor women in the state. So we've found that limiting the facilities has caused a problem in terms of access, not only in that there are fewer facilities for people to go to, but also many of the ones that are still standing are unable to provide services to as wide a group of women as they had been able to before. There are 5 facilities still left standing that are able to provide a full scope of abortion care services in the entire state of Pennsylvania. We're one of those facilities. And we've been reeling from the effects of devoting the vast majority of our human and financial resources to getting through the regulatory process, rebuilding our facility, going back and forth to our state capitol as we negotiated with the Department of Health around small pieces of the decision-making process in terms of the new licensing process that allowed us to even stay open. And we're now in the process of rebuilding what we hope will be our future, paying off the debt of that, and regrouping, because we had had plans to expand our services, provide more outreach into our community, provide different levels of access and care and to poor women, and we have had to put a lot of that on hold just to survive as a facility. And I think that that is something that's happening in states all over the country, where for those of us who have been even lucky enough to survive these types of regulations. Mm-hmm. The newest law that was passed by Corbett, I think we're going to see, you know, in a number of other states, and we're still waiting to see what the effect on us will be. We believe that what will happen is we are able to see women with private insurance in the state of Pennsylvania when their insurance had covered their abortion service, and we think that those private insurances in many cases will no longer provide coverage for the women that they were covering before.
And Jody, that's another piece of this issue that doesn't get much attention, is what does it take to actually file these lawsuits? Because they're just being introduced on a regular basis. And you're talking about clinics in states that don't have that much money. They're also passing legislation to limit funding. And so can you talk a little bit about that? How difficult is it to file these lawsuits?
You're asking me, Jody?
Yes, Jody.
Well, I mean, I think I would, you know, defer to the state folks, because I know that, for example, the Center for Reproductive Rights is constantly, ACLU and others are constantly battling these laws. But there's the portion of it that's got to be paid by the state level folks, and the portion of it that's paid by the help from national groups that have teams of lawyers, and it's rather expensive. And it's also, you know, the other side of this is it's rather expensive for the state to litigate these. And so what they're doing is they're putting in place restrictions that people honestly really don't support, and then using taxpayer funding to litigate these suits, and losing in court many times, but still. So, I'd really defer in terms of dollar amounts to the state folks, because they're much more savvy about that. I don't know, Tammy, or any, if you want to talk about that.
This is Tammy. So in North Dakota, we just wrapped up a 3-day trial in April of this year against the state for restrictions on medication abortion that they passed in 2011. And yes, thankfully, we do have the Center for Reproductive Rights that that represents us pro bono. However, we still have to provide local counsel. And so we've been paying a local attorney here for the last 2 years as we've gone to court. And we are a small clinic, and that is a big burden on us. And really, because our revenue comes from our patient fees, it really does fall on the shoulders of the women that we serve. This next lawsuit, the federal lawsuit that we are engaged in, thankfully we found two North Dakota attorneys who actually contacted us. And I think that's what has been a bit heartening for us, is that we're seeing folks who are outraged at what has happened in our state, who I don't think ever would have stepped up before. And so we're seeing support in places that we hadn't seen that before. But the state of North Dakota right now, I think that's another reason they were willing to take this on, is that we do have a budget surplus. We have billions of dollars in reserve, and so a lot of legislators who were for these bills and for these bans said money's not an object. The state of North Dakota can handle this.
Tammy, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about 300 bills just in the past 12 months introduced that would restrict abortions. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Your call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be asked and answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255 or email us a question or comment, feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about how the anti-apartheid movement has changed the struggle for social and racial justice in South Africa. We'll discuss the legacy of Nelson Mandela and the global movement against apartheid. What is his legacy worldwide and right here in Northern California? What memories do you have of Nelson Mandela and what has he meant to you? That's on tomorrow's Your Call. You can send us a show idea or a guest idea at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. Today we are talking to women in the trenches who are dealing with restrictions on abortions and a wide range of family planning services. According to the ACLU, just in the past 12 months, state legislators have introduced more than 300 bills that would restrict abortions. You can join us at 866-798-8255, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Tammy Kromenacker, director of the Red River Women's Clinic, the only clinic in North Dakota that provides abortions. She's in Fargo, North Dakota. We're also joined by Elizabeth Barnes, executive director of the Philadelphia Women's Center, and Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, an online publication that covers all of these issues. And let's hear from Christina in Sonoma. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Well, this is related but maybe slightly off topic, but I've been wondering with all this debate going on, and I am pro-choice, but I do think it is an unfortunate choice, so I'm pro-life as well. And I'm wondering what, let's say particularly the right-wing groups that are trying so hard to pass these restrictive legislations, what are they doing for alternatives, making the choice of carrying a baby to term more able for women who are having trouble taking time off work, or girls in high school? Are they, I mean, what kind of clinics are they providing, or halfway houses, which are giving them health and opportunity to bring this child to term, possibly putting them up for adoption? But what kind of effort, do we have any statistics on if they would spend more time giving an alternative than just restricting abortion? That's my question, if we know any statistics in that regard.
All right, thank you. Jody, were you able to hear Christina?
Yes, I was. You know, I would have to say really none. The thing is this, you know, we have to understand, and I've been in both situations. I've had an abortion and I've had two pregnancies. I've had two children. When I had an unintended pregnancy earlier in my life, I would have done anything not to be pregnant. When I wanted to have two children and I had two extraordinarily difficult pregnancies, I would have done anything to maintain those pregnancies. And you have to understand that oftentimes it's not a choice for a woman of something simple like, oh, I can't take time off from my job. No one that wants to be pregnant really thinks that way. Obviously there are economic and other reasons that women have behind choosing abortion, but it really isn't a matter of how do we force more women to have babies or carry them to term. But the reality is that for women that do want to carry to term, they have no supports, really. I mean, you're finding now that the right is slashing, you know, those accounts and funding that provide nutrition assistance, that provide prenatal care, postnatal care, help for infants, families with dependent children. All of those things are being slashed. Right. And you have politicians like Michelle Bachmann saying, well, if they're not working, they shouldn't eat. I mean, this is the way that we marginalize and discriminate against poor people in this country, and particularly women. So I would have to say they're doing nothing. In fact, they're making the situation worse.
What is the media's role in highlighting these connections? Because they're really important. The Texas Tribune noted that researchers at the University of Texas at Austin estimate that because of other laws that are already on the books in Texas, 144,000 fewer women received health services and 30,000 fewer unintended pregnancies were averted in 2012 than in 2010. And yet these connections are rarely made. Jody,
absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think the media actually, I mean, obviously excepting you guys and numerous other folks who do have, you know, make an effort to really get the different pieces of this story out there. I think the media has reduced the abortion debate to like a football game, you know, like which side is doing what, instead of actually examining what it means not to have safe abortion care in this country and to really understanding the real hypocrisy of those people who call themselves quote-unquote pro-life and whom I also call anti-choice. It's very important that the public be aware of the costs of these kinds of health discrimination policies. You know, the CBO came out today with an estimate that the 20-week abortion ban at the federal level would generously cost the Treasury $400 million. And, you know, I haven't really looked at their assumptions yet, but that's a pretty chunk of change for people who say that they are, you know, deficit hawks. Never mind the costs of to individual people of having an additional child or a child they can't afford. These are the real issues that when we talk at the aggregate level, we forget about the individual
right.
that are actually living the circumstances. They become invisible.
Well, Tammy, in North Dakota, when legislators talk about abortion, do they also talk about how they're going to deal with such a high poverty rate in a small state like North Dakota, population 700,000?
No, they really didn't. There was some very little Medicaid expansion, although it wasn't talked about in the same breath as, you know, we're going to put these restrictions on. And exactly like Elizabeth and Jody both said, what happened in North Dakota, they cut daycare assistance, they cut early childhood education assistance, they cut other housing assistance that working families need, and in fact went so far, you know, it sort of seemed Michelle Bachmann-esque, that they talked about, they cut the early childhood education dollars because they said those small children should be at home. When in the reality, you know, they're talking about they should be at home with mother, you know, when in reality most families have two working parents or a single mother. It's not the reality anymore that families can have one parent stay home.
And Jody, before we get back to calls, Christina asked about alternatives to abortion, and opponents often talk about pregnancy crisis centers. Can you just give us an overview of these centers briefly?
Yes. Crisis pregnancy centers are usually religiously affiliated centers that are completely anti-choice. They have networks of crisis pregnancy centers, and generally speaking, they had for a long time been receiving state-level funding, although it hadn't been documented, but now they're receiving an increasing amount of state-level funding. And in fact, these centers not only do not offer abortion care and oftentimes try to trick women out of getting safe abortion care, they also don't offer contraception or any counseling on contraception. So if you're there with a crisis pregnancy and you want to avoid another crisis pregnancy, you're not going to get that information from a crisis pregnancy center. And yet an increasing number of states are taking money out of Title X and other areas of support for family planning care and shifting it to crisis pregnancy centers. So what these legislators are actually doing is creating the conditions under which women will be forced into pregnancy because they can't afford contraception or contraception is inaccessible to them. Then they will be forced to bear the pregnancy, whether or not they can afford it, because there will be less access to abortion care, and then there will be no social support, no matter how poor or unable to find work that they are.
That is Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, an online publication covering these issues. Elizabeth Barnes, executive director of the Philadelphia Women's Center, and Tammy Kromenacker is director of the Red River Women's Clinic, the only clinic in North Dakota that provides abortions. She's in Fargo. And I would like to now welcome Andrea Jackson to the show. Andrea is with Physicians for Reproductive Health. And hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. And what do you do at Physicians for Reproductive Health?
Oh, well, currently I was under their training, so it just taught me how to advocate and to discuss comprehensive reproductive health to the lay population.
And how are you making sense of all of these bills that are passing across the country? How are you explaining this to the lay population?
You know, It's kind of hard for me as a physician to make sense of any of these bills because they don't make any medical sense. And anybody who says that they're passing these bills or coming up with these bills in order to protect women are actually doing the opposite, just like your other guests were saying.
And so can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what about the response? I mean, how do you think states, women's groups, people who care about these issues should respond to all of this?
I mean, that's a great question. I think that, you know, as physicians, I can tell you that we need to speak up and discuss how these laws will negatively impact our patients. We have to be advocates for them and to, you know, to remind the public, or not so much to remind the public, but tell them how they will impact not only the women, the health of the woman, but also her family and her community as well, too.
And as I said earlier, we're pretty safe in California. I mean, it's difficult to get access in rural areas. Obviously, if you're low income or poor, don't have much support, it's incredibly difficult regardless of where you live. But in California, we're actually, there's legislation that would further reproductive rights, right?
Yes, there is. There's two bills. The first one is a bill that seeks to improve access to early abortion services. So, you know, as you said, California is in general is fairly well off compared to other states in regards to providing reproductive health services. However, we know that there are approximately 52% of California counties have no accessible abortion provider. So the first bill is actually a bill that would seek to increase this number by allowing advanced practice clinicians to perform first trimester abortions. And first, advanced practice clinicians include nurse practitioners, certified nurse midwives, and physician's assistants. And I can tell you, as a doctor who routinely works alongside advanced practice clinicians, that this is completely within their scope of practice, and that many of them do procedures within OBGYN, including placing intrauterine contraceptive devices, and also delivering babies, all of which are much more surgically and medically more complex than a simple first trimester abortion. And we even have a study that came out in the American Journal of Public Health this past year. It was a large study that was done in California, and it compared first trimester abortions that were done by medical doctors versus those that were done by advanced practice clinicians, and there were over 11,000 first trimester abortions that they looked at. And they found two very important things. Number one, as was said before on the show, that the risk of complications in a first trimester abortion is very low, very, very low. And then the second thing that they found out as well, too, is that there was no difference between the complication rates between medical doctors and advanced practice clinicians. So this is, again, something that's definitely within their scope of care. And we know that, you know, by increasing early access to abortion, that also decreases second trimester abortions, which we know are more difficult, more complex, and definitely have a higher risk for complications.
And what's the status of those bills, just quickly?
Yeah. So with the advanced practice clinicians, the current status is that it passed the Assembly and it's now moving through the Senate, and actually will be heard by the Senate Health Committee this Wednesday. The second bill is just the Confidential Health Information Act, and it keeps any sensitive medical information about a patient who's covered under another person's plan, so like a minor covered by their parents, it keeps it private and safe for that patient. That one is currently, it passed the Senate. It is now moving through the Assembly.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Andrea.
No problem.
That's Dr. Andrea Jackson calling in from Physicians for Reproductive Health in California. We'll put information about those bills on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Kate in Alameda. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. My question is, you know, for someone like me who lives in the Bay Area where our rights are, you know, really not as much under attack, I'm wondering what your guests think might be some of the best forms of activism, you know, that we could do to support states like North Dakota and Texas where they really are under attack.
You know?
I donate to Planned Parenthood, but outside of that, you know, what can we do to help?
Right. Thank you so much. Tammy in Fargo, North Dakota, what can we in California who care about these issues and care about you all in Fargo, North Dakota, what can we do to support what you're doing or what you're dealing with?
Well, there's several things that people can do across the country to show their support. One thing that people need to remember is that approximately 70 to 80% of all abortions performed in this country are performed by independent abortion providers like Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo and like the clinics that Elizabeth runs on the East Coast. Although Planned Parenthood tends to be the largest organization and the name that people are most familiar with, it's really small clinics like ours and independent clinics and independent providers that are the front line for abortions. And so it's not easy to say, I don't have like a big, you know, give to this. But clearly the Center for Reproductive Rights is some place that's been helpful to many, many independent providers. So donating to them, using social media, look for these small clinic social media sites and use that to keep people informed. Follow RH Reality Check. That's an excellent source of information, and they can direct you to specific needs in specific areas. But you've got, I really think the biggest thing, especially in Texas right now, one of the clinics that could stay open that's run by a friend of Elizabeth and I is Amy Hagstrom-Miller, runs Whole Woman's Health in Texas. They would be one of the five clinics that they think could stay open. You know, she's talking about, oh, my gosh, we have to be open 24/7.
Wow.
So use the social media, follow RH Reality Check, and, you know, be aware that it's independent abortion providers that need your help more than sometimes these larger organizations that have really good structure and really good fundraising ability. You know, when people ask me how do they donate to my clinic, I'm like, I don't know. No, we don't have a donation department. I mean, we're taking it. People can send it. But I'm the IT person. I'm the clinic director. I'm the, you know, foundation support. We just don't have that structural organization. So just watch those other sites and be aware. And it's the small little clinics and small little independent providers around the country that really need your support.
If I could add just
a little bit,
there's we have up on our site today, we've raised money before for Red River Women's Clinic and intend to do it again. In other words, we take the money specifically for them and give it to them directly. We've done it for other clinics. We also have the links up on our site today for direct donations in Texas to the Lilith Fund, which is a provider of funding for women who cannot afford a safe abortion care, as well as the T Fund, the Texas Equality Fund, that also does the same thing as the Lilith Fund. These are abortion funds that exist in every state that help women who cannot afford abortion care to get it. We also have the link up for Whole Women's Health. So if you are interested and want to get easy access to that, there's a post on our site where you can go right through to the funds themselves and to Amy's clinic and donate right directly to them.
And Elizabeth, you're the executive director of four centers that provide care in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Georgia, and Connecticut. How would you answer that question? What's the best way for people in places like California to support the work that you're all doing?
I would encourage people, if they have the stomach for it, is to follow political races in states that are not abortion-friendly or could swing in either direction, and to donate to pro-choice candidates, even if they're not within their own district or state, because that is how the anti-choice movement is very well organized. They have a lot of money, and they put it where they need to, regardless if it's on their home-based territory. I am hoping that at some point soon we will see pro-choice organizations that in some ways mirror some of the anti-choice organizations that are specifically organized around specific issues that reach populations that can be motivated to work for the pro-choice cause in a way that perhaps they haven't been motivated before or haven't had the pathway they needed to find their power. So, for example, the anti-choice movement has a couple of organizations that are specifically rally anti-choice lawyers to help work for free for the benefit of the anti-choice causes. And we do not have those same free services available to us except through great organizations like the Center for Reproductive Rights, but their lawyers are paid. They're not lawyers volunteering pro bono time. I also would like to add to the helping support poor women seeking abortion will help also fund abortion services within the clinics and help us stay open. So another great source to go to do that is the National Network of Abortion Funds. And Jody mentioned the Amy's Clinic, which is Whole Woman's Health, through, and you can access their website through RH Reality Check's website, but you can also go to wholewomanshealth.com, and their fund is called the Stigma Relief Fund. And the reason they named it the Stigma Relief Fund is because many of us believe that the source of a lot of the vitriol and the marginalization, vitriol against abortion providers and the marginalization of abortion as a practice of medicine is in the stigma surrounding abortion care and the stigma surrounding women's sexuality and women's free and open access to all of their pregnancy choices. And so they call it their Stigma Relief Fund because everything they're doing is working at different levels to fight that, whether it be today rallying people at the state legislature in Texas or on another day providing terrific counseling and education services so that women and girls can find the pathway to the best choice for them when faced with an unplanned or unintended pregnancy.
And what sort of changes are you seeing at the centers you work with? Is demand increasing? I mean, what changes have you seen in the last couple of years?
Oh, gosh. We have seen an increase in poverty, mm-hmm. and women seek unable to pay for their services. And that feels fairly dramatic. I think that's in keeping with the economy in the United States, as well as continued decreased funding for reproductive health care generally and abortion care. We see a continued difficulty in finding well-trained abortion providers, though there has been a terrific movement in the medical community to fund new training sites throughout the country, and I do think there will be a shift, at least in the major urban areas and the East Coast and again on the West Coast, and where you'll continue to see a lack of providers are in the rural areas, the Midwest, and in small venues that can't afford to support a provider to live there and in safety and in regular employment. We're seeing a trend in our protest activity is on the rise, and it is more multifaceted than it has been in the past. In the past, a lot of the protest activity that we would deal with was directly on the front line of the clinic, the visual that I'm sure many listeners have in their heads of people with various levels of graphic picket signs standing outside facilities. But now, the majority, we still experience that, the more dangerous and difficult protester activity is coming through protesters posing as patients and potentially endangering the staff and physicians of staff and our physicians. Wow. Protesters creating false complaints about the clinic to boards of medicine, to the departments of health, to OSHA, to the different regulatory agencies that serve each state and the federal government, and these agencies then often are obligated to act on these false complaints, and then the providers themselves do not have the opportunity to access the source of the complaint or even the complaint in full, and so it makes it very difficult for us to respond effectively, but we have to devote quite a lot of resources to dealing with the regulatory agencies.
Wow. Where do you get the passion to keep going with this, Elizabeth? Because, you know, we've made calls to people in the past and on this show, and some of our guests have said, please do not share my phone number publicly because I have received death threats. I mean, this is very serious, and it's easy to forget that when you live in a place like California.
I think the people that I am lucky enough to work with in my organization and around the country, like Tammy on the phone now and Amy, who's leading the fight in Texas, I don't think it would ever occur to us not to do it. It's incredible, incredible work to help provide people a path to something different, potentially something better, a way of taking charge of their own lives at potentially the hardest point in a dignified and compassionate and safe way. I see many, many, many patients who have never been treated with dignity in medicine, have never been heard, have never had all of their questions answered, have not had the opportunity to ask all the questions they wanted to ask. I mean, just those simple things make me really excited to get out of bed and do this terrific work. I also think that providing accessible, safe, respectful, compassionate abortion care is a real means of providing a jump start for girls and women all over the country and the world to a better life because it gives them the opportunity to control their fate.
Mm. And Tammy, just briefly, what would you add to that?
Oh, Elizabeth said it so well, but it really, what it comes down to is the women and the women that we serve, and to exactly what Elizabeth said, to provide that opportunity for them, to provide that experience for them. And just like our friend Amy, who runs Whole Woman's Health, we're changing the world one woman at a time. And that's really what abortion care is all about. And just like Elizabeth said, I can't imagine doing anything differently with my life.
Jody, what strikes you most about these women who just keep getting up every day and fighting? 300 laws just in the past 12 months.
What strikes me about them is that they are the people that I aspire to be. They propel me forward every day. I mean, I don't do half or a quarter of what they do every day in terms of serving women. And, you know, I am literally sometimes moved to tears by all of you. So I can't say enough about you.
Well, unfortunately, we weren't able to check in with someone on the ground in Texas. I think that I've already seen tons of photos and things on Twitter. There's a lot happening there. Just in our last 30 seconds, Jody, the significance of Texas, since it is getting national attention.
It's very significant because this is a huge state with a huge population of women that will be bereft of access to care. And it's a huge political issue in terms of, you know, giving the far right the things they wish to do, and it's putting a huge number of women in danger.
Well, we'll definitely continue to follow this and do another show. Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, Elizabeth Barnes, executive director of the Philadelphia Women's Center, and Tammy Kromenacher is director of the Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo, North Dakota. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thanks, Rose, for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar at York Call. How has the anti-apartheid movement changed the struggle for social and racial justice in South Africa? On the next Your Call, we'll discuss the legacy of Nelson Mandela, the leader of the African National Congress and the global movement against apartheid. What is Mandela's legacy worldwide and right here in Northern California? If you were active in the anti-apartheid movement, how did it change you? What memories do you have of Nelson Mandela? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.